So, again, we've had a bit of a break now in lectures, and we'll resume now. We've been talking about cellular telephony systems, or mobile systems in general, and at sort of several lectures ago, we noted that there's been an evolution. 1G systems were provided analog voice connections. 2G moved those voice connections to digital voice connections, but still overwhelmingly a voice connection service. 3G was aimed at handling packet data well, okay, so at reasonable data rates and making it sort of a core function as opposed to just something that you might be able to graft on to your basically telephony network. And then 4G represents a move to even higher data rates and indeed into sort of all IP networks. Okay. We then had a look at GSM as one of the predominant 2G network protocols, and again, GSM provides or supports primarily digital voice connectivity, okay? And so it's connection-oriented, and its goal is to allocate channels which are all of a fixed size, suitable to digital voice transmission. Okay. We had a look at the architecture, and so the network sort of splits out into a number of sort of functions. The first and most important, of course, is to provide that initial radio access link between the user and the base station. And that link is controlled by the base station control component of the architecture. Okay. And so the data to and from the user to the base station is then relayed from the base station control to a switching subsystem, which is responsible for sort of making a complete link through the existing back-end networks. So that could be the internet, it could be, it's traditionally, it's the sort of telephony back end, okay. And finally, you had an operations management center, which is responsible for system management and billing. And so we had a fairly thorough look about as to how sort of these end-to-end connections were accomplished. And of course, the primary complication is in this radio access component. And then also in the fact that you have mobility. So it's not like you can set up one link and that sort of goes for the entire connection, but potentially you have to sort of move the radio access link from station to station to station. Okay. And it's okay. So what do we? There we go. Okay. So, again, this is it's a telephony system, and so you have to be a bit careful to sort of keep what's going on a bit distinct from what we sort of typically say about packet networks and sort of the OSI architecture. In those cases, typically sort of the packet is sort of distinct and sort of handled distinctly. Again, for telephony networks, the whole goal is to have to set up connections, and once the connection is set up, you know, the actual data transmission along the connection is then quite straightforward compared to when you're transferring a packet, and at each point in the connection you have to make sort of significant decisions about routing, etc. Okay, and so instead of thinking of, although it's still layered, the layers are slightly different, and a distinction is made between control and sort of what they call planes, a control plane and a user plane. And the control plane is all of the signaling that you need to do to set up your connection and maintain your connection. Okay. And so in telephony systems, this is sort of where the complexity is in making those sorts of decisions. Once you've set that all up in the user plane, you know, happy days, you can just transmit the data, okay, fairly straightforwardly. Okay, so we still talked about layered protocols, but that layering was referring to the control portion of the problem. Okay, so the signaling and arranging the connection. And then once that connection was arranged, you just assumed you essentially had a data pipe and could send it, sort of where it, send your data where it needed to go. Okay. And so we discussed what's called layer 3 for GSM. Again, not to be confused with layer 3 in the OSI model, which is networking, but it's, again, how do you set up this connection, and you have the three components: radio resource management, mobility management, and connection management. Okay, and then we had a look at sort of and just jumping back a bit, one of the sort of primary added complexities for this control plane is sort of distinguishing. So you're distinguishing between your the types of data you're sending, and this was distinguished by the use of channels. So we had channels which transmitted data. We had channels which transmitted control information. And we saw that there was sort of a very complex mapping of these channels onto the actual physical channels, which consisted of frequencies and time slots. Okay. And so the system, again, knew just by sort of what physical channel, again, the time slot and the frequency, what sort of data to expect sort of incoming at any given time. But again, this was sort of complex in the sense that within a single cycle, so any time slot and frequency sort of at different points could be transmitting different sorts of data, and that had to all be tracked. And finally, we took a look at a couple of functions, sort of some of the key functions, and how that sort of all fit into this idea of the different protocol layers and the channel structure and how you transmit it, what signals had to be sent along what channels at any given time. Okay. So, the world has, the networks world has changed a lot since the advent of, well, 1G and 2G systems. I was actually really surprised. I was visiting my family, and my parents actually had an analog cell phone up till like 2 years ago. So I actually thought things had moved a little farther than that, but be that as it may, we're now into a world that is much more data-centered than voice-centered. Okay. So people would like services such as, well, voice over IP. They'd also like to be able to surf the web. They want to be able to watch movies, potentially. They want to essentially replicate what they can get on a desktop on their mobile device. And, of course, not have to pay a whole lot for it. So, in order to do this, well, moving from your connection-oriented, voice-oriented systems, we have to move on to systems that handle packets and handle packets efficiently. Okay. And again, this can be seen as an evolutionary process, to some extent more than revolutionary. The first attempts to handle packets are essentially just to sort of provide separate functionality that is packet-oriented, and from that point to try and improve sort of the data rates through both sort of more efficient allocation of resources and also more efficient use of the spectrum. Okay, so there's hardware improvements. You're just trying to increase the overall spectral efficiency, and then you're also trying to improve how you use those resources. In general, that means moving from channel allocation, so to sort of a time slot connection-oriented allocation, to multiplexing and statistical multiplexing along those time slots. Okay, so things that are more efficient for packet transmission. Okay, so we're going to sort of look at this sort of globally, but for our examples, again, we're going to look at the evolution of GSM into 3G services, and this follows a number of steps, the first of which would be GPRS, which again adds packet handling to GSM, and then onwards to UMTS, which is sort of the 3G service, and adds, again, spectral efficiency and resource allocation efficiency into the system, okay, so that you can get reasonable data rates out of your system, okay. And so I've given you references both for GPRS and UMTS, and then WCDMA is the most popular air interface for UMTS. So it's the most popular sort of way of implementing the physical layer of UMTS. Okay. And so we'll discuss it within the notes and hopefully give you a sense of how this is working. Okay, so what are we going to move through here? Well, I'll mention HSC, that should be SD, and HSC SD provides packet handling within the GSM framework. So essentially it allows packets to be transmitted over these sort of connection-oriented channels. So sort of like if you had a modem on your for your telephone. Okay. GPRS then provides dedicated packet handling, so there are specific components within the system that are deal with packets, sort of separate to dealing with telephony connections, to dealing with voice connections. And sort of Edge is an enhancement of GPRS, which gives you sort of higher data rates, and some people call that 2.75. UMTS, again, is the 3G standard. And so the differences here are, well, there's a different spectrum allocation. The error interfaces now change, and you use sort of all sorts of technological tricks to try and get high spectral efficiency. And the medium access control, again, becomes more complicated, more geared towards sort of efficient transmission of packets. So again, you'll introduce statistical multiplexing of channels as well. And then LTE Advanced is your 4G standard, following on from UMTS. And the idea here is to, again, go to all IP networks and, again, even higher data rates. Okay. So I mentioned HSCSD, high-speed circuit switch data services, just because historically it was sort of the first attempt to provide data services over the cellular network, over the GSM network. And essentially it did that by allocating channels. So in a connection-oriented fashion, it allocated channels which you didn't have to use for voice, you could now use to transmit packets. Okay. And so you could, a user could have between 1 and 8 time slots allocated to data transmission, and typically sort of a maximum of 4 time slots was allocated. And so all of the time slots were sort of handled as a unit then. And the traffic is, and the time slots again had to be bundled. So if you were doing handover, you had to hand over all of the time slots, all of the channels at the same time. So again, one base station would have the whole connection at any given time. Okay. And so it wasn't a terribly efficient way of allocating data services. Obviously, again, connection-oriented does not necessarily suit a lot of data transmission. It's not a terribly efficient way of going about it. And from the network point of view, you had the problem of you were now tying up a number of channels for a given connection, and so there was a higher probability of blocking when you were doing handover, because you now needed not just one time slot but a number of time slots at the same time. Okay. So in order to set this up, the user would indicate, well, how many channels they wanted, and what was the absolute minimum number of channels they were willing to accept, what sort of channel coding did they want, so did they require error correction or not, what type of modem should be used, and what sort of data rates were required. Okay, and then the system would go and see if the resources were available. Okay, it was possible to get either symmetric or asymmetric connections where you may or may not have the same number of time slots in the uplink and downlink direction. Okay, and so pricing depended on the connection and the number of time slots used. Okay, so regardless of sort of how efficiently you were using those time slots, if you were tying them up, you had to pay for them. Okay. Now, GPRS represented an improvement on this sort of operation in the sense that it handled packets separately to voice connections. Okay. So you didn't require connection setups, and the user could be charged on a per packet basis as opposed to a per connection basis. Okay. And so it provided data rates that, again, by today's standards, aren't that impressive, but you can get some stuff done on them. And again, the goal was to provide reasonable IP services, basically without having to scrap the existing mobile system entirely, to be able to preserve as much of the sort of existing equipment as possible. Okay. And so the way GPRS accomplished this was by adding essentially separate elements which handled packets. So you would sort of have two parallel things going on. You have packets being handled and voice connections being handled sort of in parallel. Okay. And so you could sort of split the resources amongst those two functions. And so in order to do this, GPRS provides a GPRS support node, the GSN, which connects you into, which connects to the data network, and then, it handles packets, and then there are two primary types of nodes, the serving GSN, which has functions similar to the MSC, so it receives packets from the base station and sort of forwards them onwards, and then the gateway GSN, which is which forwards packets into the external data network. Okay, so the GSN, or sorry, the SGSN is similar to the MSC, and it handles sort of it's the same sorts of things as the MSC would, except again in the packet context. And then the GSN, the GGSN forwards the packets onwards. Okay. And so, again, the nice thing about this was that you didn't need to change the existing sort of telephony side of the equipment, the voice connection side of the equipment. You could add sort of components dedicated to controlling packets. So at the base station, you added a packet control unit, which again, so you could handle voice connections and packet connections separately. And then at the switching subsystem, you added the GPRS support nodes. So again, ways of handling the packets separately, although sort of in parallel with the voice connections. Okay, so all of the old components were retained and more or less unchanged. But you now had packet handling capability as well. Okay. And so, again, we have our new nodes. And typically, the MSC and the SGSN coordinate to exchange the information about the user for all services. Okay, so it's probably easier to see in the architecture picture here. We have our basic GSM architecture, so we had our switching subsystem and our base station subsystem, and we had our BS, our phone, our mobile unit connected to a base station, which connected to was controlled by a BSC and connected to the BSC, and then the BSC connects to the MSC, and the MSC forwards the connection on to the GMSC, which forwards it on to the wired telephone backend. Okay, and we saw that there were the number of databases that were required for authentication and tracking of the users. So now again, we have, if our end user wants to send packets, that's handled by the packet control unit. And the packet control unit is controlled by the SGSN. Now, the SGSN coordinates with the MSC, particularly, again, in matters of tracking users and authenticating users. So it typically, the MSC is the one that sort of controls that information, and the SGSN will coordinate with the MSC. And then the SGSN forwards the packets to the GGSN, which forwards it again to the data, to a wired back-end data network like the internet or an ISP. Okay. And so the nice thing about this is that now we can have statistical multiplexing of our channels. So we still have the idea of channels are a time slot and a frequency, but now a channel might be occupied by a voice connection, but if it's not occupied by a voice connection, then it can be multiplexed among whatever packets need to be sent. So you can use it to send packets via a statistical multiplexing scheme. Okay. And so what happens is that users will be allocated a specific frequency to be transmitting on, for both uplink and downlink. And again, the uplink and downlink are linked. And then These frequencies are going to be, statistical multiplexing is going to be applied to these frequencies. Okay. So in the downlink direction, packets are just handled on a first-come, first-served basis. And then in the uplink direction, obviously it's a little more complicated because there's no centralized control, no centralized awareness of what needs to be sent at any given time. So what's used is a reservation system. So an end user who wants to transmit data requests bandwidth or requests resources from the system using an Aloha protocol. Okay, so again, just a random access protocol with some backup scheme, back off scheme. And so the resources get requested, and then the BSC determines some sort of allocation scheme, which is then communicated back to the users. And so essentially they're given a specific time slot along at which time they can transmit their data. Okay. And this time scheme uses a first-come, first-served scheduling mechanism. So requests are handled in the order that they come in, and the resources are allocated in the order they're requested. Okay, so again, the idea here is that you can make much more efficient use of the channels. They don't have to be dedicated to one user, but can be shared among many. Okay, so all of this is accomplished, again, through the use of more signaling. So here, essentially, you have signaling by the users to request the resources. You have signaling by the system to inform the resources of the to inform the users of the resource allocation, and sort of when they're free to transmit their data. And so, essentially, what this means is that you have your logical channel structure has become slightly more complex. It now has to handle not only voice connectivity, but packet transmissions as well. Okay. And so we now have additional logical channels which are dedicated to packet control functions. Okay. And so there's, again, a mapping between our logical channels and our physical channels. There's a distinction for logical channels between data transmission and control. We're not going to sort of revisit the whole hierarchy again, just to sort of be aware that this has to slot into, it's a similar idea, and we just have to slot a few more channels into the system. Okay. So we have the same types of logical channels. We have but now, again, dedicated to packet transmission. We've got packet data traffic channels. Which, again, handle the data transmission. We've got packet common control channels, which handle all the sort of the resource allocation. We have packet broadcast control channels, which, again, organize the sort of general radio links and dedicated control channels, which again are sort of on a per user basis. Excuse me. Okay. And so similarly, in order to perform the sort of GPRS functionality, you go from the broadcast control channels to dedicated control channels and perform all the signaling necessary. Okay. So, the resource allocation problem makes sort of quality of service for mobile systems a lot more complex than for your typical wired system. Typically, what happens in your wired internet is that if things get slow, you just throw some more resources at it. You add another wire. You add another fiber optic cable, and that takes care of your problem for a while at least. There's no corresponding mechanism for radio channels. You have a certain spectrum that can be sort of subdivided into a fixed number of pieces, and once those are gone, there is really no adding more. There's no simple way of adding more. Again, you can sort of get more cleverer and cleverer transmission techniques, and you can try and squeeze more channels, but you're not going to, you don't have the option of sort of quickly doubling, tripling, quadrupling your capacity. Okay. And so quality of service is an issue. And again, if you want to provide sort of all sorts of data services, it's more of a problem here, and it's more important to try and prioritize data according to its requirements and its type than it would be for wired networks. Okay. And so GPRS does allow for the classification of data traffic, and it classifies according to four parameters. So you can have a precedence, so you can assign priorities to your traffic. You can have delay classes. And so, and for each of these delay classes, you can try to provide some guarantees on delay. And those break down into your ITUT QoS categorization of applications. So you have conversational, which is your voice connections, so you have a certain amount of delay, but not too much. Streaming, interactive, which is like web browsing, and background, which is just sort of file transfer stuff that doesn't have to happen too quickly. Okay. Additionally, the applications can be, or the traffic can be classed according to reliability requirements. And so again, this delay in reliability, that's the ITUT way of classifying different types of applications. And then the user can also request throughput, so sort of just raw data rates that they are required for their applications. Okay. And so GPRS will sort of take that on board in a very sort of best effort fashion and generically voice connections take precedence in GPRS. Okay, so it's not actually possible to guarantee reliability, but it's significant that there is a framework for doing so. Okay. And again, this is something that is not seen as necessary for the internet, for instance. The internet lumps along well enough by just keeping adding resources to it. Okay, so GPRS uses similar coding schemes to GSM, and they have distinguished according to the requirements according to channel conditions and type of service required. So if a service is error intolerant, then a better quality coding scheme will be used. And in general, there are four coding schemes, sort of from quite strong to relatively weak. And so CS1 is the strongest, and it would be used if the channel conditions are poor and the user still required reliable service. Okay, so and it would allow for sort of correction of errors. CS4 would be the weakest, and that would be used in when the channel conditions are good, and additionally the user wasn't too pushed about their reliability, and so it uses sort of a very light coding, only block coding is applied. Okay. Naturally, the trade-off between strength of coding scheme is obviously improved error handling, but that comes at the cost of your data rate. So the more bits you have to use for the coding scheme, the less bits are required, are available for data transmission. Okay, so for your strongest scheme gives the lowest data rate. And again, you can improve the data rates within GSM by assigning more time slots to a single entity. Okay. And so again, the data rates go from 9 kilobits per second to 171 kilobits per second. Okay, and so again, GPRS can sort of attempt to deliver various qualities of service by changing the data rate, by the number of slots allocated, and changing the coding scheme, which again will impact on what reliability you get. Okay. And so the services are negotiated on a minimum and maximum performance basis, and usually minimum is not so hot, and sort of maximum depends on the loading in the system. So, again, just to wrap up, GPRS does offer a genuine packet-switched service, so it's not just transmitting packets through a circuit-switched service, but it's handling packets in the way you might expect. It does it sort of in parallel to the GSM network, so you can, from the network operator perspective, they were able to add equipment but not have to scrap what they were using currently. And it gives you some data rates, but not anything that would get people excited by today's standards. Okay. Now, Edge follows along this path and essentially offers higher data rates, and this is done by sort of more sophisticated modulation techniques and channel coding. Okay. Arguably, Edge does satisfy the sort of 3G data rate standards. Okay. EGPRS then is the enhancements to GPRS that satisfy the Edge specifications. Okay, so that's the actual realization of an Edge system. And again, this is done as an evolution from GSM. Okay. Edge triples the data rates offered by GSM, and again, it does this by more sophisticated modulation techniques, data rates are adaptable according to the quality of the radio channel. So the actual bit transmission can, so the rate can change, and the coding schemes change as well. So again, you're going to get flexible data rate. And like GPRS, Edge allows for multiple time slots to be dedicated to a single packet transmission. Okay. And so what are the major improvements? The modulation technique, again, changes here. So that's going to be a change in user equipment. And it uses 8 PSK, meaning that you have 3 bits transmitted per signaling element as opposed to a single bit. Okay, so that's where the tripling of the data rates comes in. Okay. It also uses frequency hopping and to reduce co-channel interference and therefore increase the system capacity. And again, the link, the modulation and channel coding schemes are adaptable based on the link quality. Okay, so if you have a poor quality link, you're going to transmit at a slower rate, and you'll also use additional encoding to try to deal with errors. Okay. And so, again, the main modifications that have to be made in this case are to the transmission equipment. You've changed your modulation technique, so you obviously need new equipment. Okay, and this is just a few more details about the improvements. So again, the slow frequency hopping allows you sort of resistance to all these channel effects, so channel fading, you get lower co-channel interference, and therefore an increase to system capacity. And specifically, any block of data is sent on 4 different frequency carriers. So again, if one is poor, you hope you have enough data in the other portions to make up for it. Okay, and in terms of link quality control, the mobile station communicates with the base station about the quality of the channel, so it takes measurements and it indicates what it perceives the quality of the channel to be, and based on that, the modulation and coding schemes are changed. And you have a choice of two modulation schemes, essentially your 8 PSK or just a single PSK, and 9 different coding rates are possible as well. Okay. Okay. So that's sort of the move up to 3G. And again, this was quite evolutionary. It didn't require huge changes to the GSM network. 3G, by contrast, it's still an evolutionary step, because again, no one is completely willing to toss out everything, but it relies on different spectrum allocation, and therefore requires significant changes to the air interface side of the network. So I'm going to take a break here. So when we get back in about 15 minutes or so, we will have a look at, well, generically, 3G, what its purpose is and sort of what the various approaches are. And then again, we'll have a look at UMTS, which is the evolutionary approach based on GPRS, well, GSM, GPRS. Okay. So again, trying to preserve as much of the existing network infrastructure as possible. So we'll have a short, medium break now, and then we'll have the remaining time we'll be spent talking about 3G.